Golf Smarter number 625. Stay tuned after our conversation for another installment of the Golf Smarter Academy, presented by Health IQ. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/golfsmarter or mention the promo code GOLFSMARTER when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Practice versus warming up. There is a difference. And how to take advantage of both with John Battaglia.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, John.
Thanks, Fred. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad that you are here because I like our topic for today, and that's going to be practice. I think it's a great topic because as much as we talk about it, it's never enough. Before we go there, I want to establish a little bit about you and what you do and where you do it. So give me some information.
My whole name is John Battaglia, and I teach down in the desert of California at PGA West in La Quinta. And I've been out here for the last 13 years, and something that I've been trained by the Jim McLean Golf School, right? So I've been around a lot of top 100 instructors, and my instruction has grown. I've worked with players of all levels, and now still work with players of all levels because of the demographics here. I teach people that are seniors, and I teach people in high school. So it's kind of a nice array of students, and I get to see new things every day, which is kind of the best part of the job.
Yeah, I would think so. So when you you said you worked with Jim McLean Golf School, or were you trained at?
Jim McLean used to have a golf school at PGA West.
Okay.
And so I started with him 13 years ago. I worked with him for 7 years. And then he left PGA West, and we started the PGA West Golf Academy.
Okay. And what does that entail? I'm fascinated by it's one thing for somebody to sign up and go to a big brand name. And I think Jim McLean can be considered a brand.
For sure.
It's one thing to go to a clinic like that, but what's it like to train to teach at a clinic like that?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the things that Jim was great at. You know, Jim has a lot of top 100 instructors that he's trained, which is a pretty interesting thing. And so it's somewhat of a grueling process. It's definitely not an overnight process where there's I went through an internship. And then after that, I became an assistant, and most people would start at that level. And you learn by watching the best teachers there teach. And there's a test that Jim McLean gives you that more than anything really kind of requires you to go over a lot of his information through his books, which some of his books are very good. And then that starts turning into a teaching job. Now, the one last thing with Jim that you have to do before you can teach is you have to video yourself giving presentations. And then he has to okay them. You know, so I think that the big thing that you learn from being taught from a high-end academy like that is how to present the information, right? So there's
present their information.
You get a handle on how to present information, where there's a lot of instructors all over the nation, and there's a lot of different people teaching different things, and the best of the instructors, they're not necessarily doing something special with their teaching stuff. They're doing something special with being able to get the student to do what they're talking about. And so you learn how to put things in the correct kind of order, kind of a building block approach and things like that, that allow you to see change in students. So I think that's kind of one of the biggest things I was able to pull away from it, was learning how to structure the lesson, learning how to structure practice for the student afterward, and how to structure a whole golf academy was some of the interesting stuff to see. Jim did really well.
Yeah. Very interesting. So what makes Jim McLean's information unique to other schools? And I know that you can't compare it to other schools, but I mean, except for PGA West.
Yeah, well, I take a lot of lessons myself, so I've been to other schools. And the biggest difference between Jim McClain and other schools is that Jim McClain understands that there's more than one way to swing the club. And so you have a lot of methods out there, some great teachers in those methods, and some great methods, right? Those methods just aren't necessarily suitable for everyone. And so you start driving a lot of people towards a technique. It doesn't necessarily work for some people, and it works great for others. And what Jim's opinion was, and the opinion that I have, and I think a lot of other instructors that have worked for Jim have, is that we want to be able to teach everybody, and we want to be able to teach every part of the game. And so really being able to do that, you have to know those other methods and be able to come up with a system of what is important and what are fundamentals and what are the things that all great players do, and those would be things that you want to be doing as well, instead of kind of pigeonholing yourself and saying this is the only way you can swing the golf club.
I love the idea that they understand that everybody has a different swing and that you got to work with that as opposed to somebody trying to fit into your system.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really old, but I remember growing up watching golf, and back then especially, and maybe it's a little bit less now, but not even necessarily. If you look at some of the in the top five, there's a lot of different ways to play the game, and there's a lot of ways to swing the club.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Hall of Fame is filled with people who draw the ball and fade the ball and hit it low and hit it high. And it's really hard for me to get on board with saying, well, this is the only way you can do it.
Right. Right. I'm fascinated. After being trained at the Jim McClain School, were you a better golfer?
It's an interesting question, you know. For sure now, for sure, 100%. There's always a little bit of a joke, and I think this happens not just at Jim McClain schools, but this happens at all golf schools when the new young assistants show up and they're listening to all of the instructors give all of their great advice to them on their swings. They can go into information overload, and there's definitely a season or two with some crazy stuff going on. But as you start to sift through the information and figure out what's important, you end up with really good information, but there's always that that first overload of, oh, I just want to try everything, you know? And that's kind of a comical thing that happens in golf school or golf academies and golf schools for those first year people that come out. So after the dust has settled, yeah, my game's a whole lot better, but there was definitely some dust in there in the beginning.
And what's the difference between the PGA West Academy now and what you learned from McClain?
Well, the biggest difference is that we don't have a name on the wall that we have to teach us under a certain characteristic.
Oh,
so not every teacher that we have was with Jim McClain. A majority of them were, but not all of them were. Like I kind of mentioned, the nice thing about Jim was that umbrella is a pretty big umbrella, right, which includes a lot of things, which is a nice thing about it. So we've become independent contractors, and we've really been able to find ourselves in teaching. So like the last 5 years in teaching have been a lot of fun for me, because I feel like I've kind of been given the ammo, and I've been able to go out there and kind of do it the way that I see fit. And it's been a fun way to kind of grow my business and get a even deeper connection with a lot of my students.
Hmm. And is the training that you've received, is it all facets? How do I word this? Is it swing mechanics? Are you just focused on that, or do they also give you on course, strategic lessons and how to? Here goes how to golf smarter around.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. You know, I don't think that there's any textbook that you can really read to become a great teacher of all of the facets. I think that you have to meet a lot of different instructors and take a lot of different lessons and go into a lot of situations with your ears open and your mind open and trying to figure out some stuff. And there's definitely some people's comments that hold more weight than others. Mm-hmm. And I think that you'd have to try to put some things together. But I think if you take golf out of the equation, you look at all great teachers, that's what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you, as a golfer, not as a golf instructor, this is one of my all-time favorite questions. I'm going to throw it in early today. As a golfer, and again, not a golf instructor, but as a golfer, what's the best advice you've ever received?
It's probably just to stay in balance.
Hmm. So hard to do.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it would be something really simple like that. I mean, another one would be, when you're in trouble, get out of trouble. It's always been a good one that I like.
Is that a golf lesson or is that just basic life?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think that's one that's served me well on the golf course as well.
So when you're saying when you get in trouble, get out of trouble, as opposed to when you get in trouble, don't try to be a hero.
I remember watching Playing Lessons with the Pros with Jim Thorpe, and he said, when you're in trouble, just eliminate double bogey and triple bogey.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That means, yeah, pitch it out to the fairway,
yep.
Hit it on the green, try to make the putt. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Two putt it and make a bogey and see you later.
Just because you can see the pin in between the trees,
right?
And just because you can see it doesn't mean you can get there. And doesn't mean that shot's in your bag, because you probably never practiced that shot anyway. So why would you put yourself in that position? Because you're right. If you just pitch out, you have a much better shot of getting yourself to a bogey than if you go for it and end up with a double or a triple.
Right. And it's a game that usually involves betting, and keeping those big numbers out of there is a big part to managing your score and winning some bets.
Yeah. Yeah. How are things at PGA West?
They're rocking and rolling right now. You know, we're in the middle of season. This is our high time. It was about 80 degrees today and about 3 clouds in the sky.
We're
perfect.
In the beginning of February here and talking about 80 degrees. Okay.
Right. Yeah. It was, it's been just beautiful. And this is what we do here. You know, like this time of year is when you want to be here.
Yeah.
And the summer's not as bad as it sounds and as people say, but
really?
This is our prime time, kind of November through May.
Well, it's not so bad when you're indoors and the air conditioning's on. You can get to 100.
There's lots of perks.
You can get to 120 down there.
It's nice to play golf in 3 hours.
Well, there is that advantage. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm coming down to the area at the end of February, and I'm hoping to get a chance. PGA West has a number of courses, doesn't it?
It does, including the privates and the Citrus course and the resort, which is all connected. We have 9 courses.
Wow. How many of those are private? How many are public? And what is Citrus course?
Well, so we have the Citrus course, which is a Pete Dye course. We have the Citrus, we have the Arnold Palmer Private, the Nick Private, and the Weisskopf course. And those 4 courses would be our 4 private courses. And then we have the Mountain and Dunes, which are also Pete Dye courses, the Jack Nicklaus Tournament course, the Greg Norman course, and then we have the Stadium course, which is our other Pete Dye course. And the Stadium and the Nick Tournament are where the Career Builder were played this last year and the year before. And in previous years, it's been played over on some of the private courses.
So if I'm going to come down and I want to play twice at PGA West, which two, obviously not the private, which two courses would, let's say, some, middle handicappers want to go out and play from the front tees?
from
the whites.
A couple of things. You know, the Mountain course that we have over at the resort is a beautiful course. It used to be in the top 100. It's a phenomenal course and a very majestic course, right? It's a lot of great vistas and things like that. The Greg Norman course is a lot of fun because it's wide open. The fairways are wide. I don't know if it's wide open. I shouldn't have said that, but it's very wide fairways and then a true desert course, right? So there's a lot of desert out there. But then I would have to say that my two favorite would be the Jack Nicklaus Tournament and the Stadium, mainly because that's where I teach, but it's also a lot of fun to play a golf course that you've seen on TV. And so playing golf and going home or the next year seeing the tour players hit shots from the same places you hit or shooting 20 under par over 4 days on courses that were pretty tough for you is always a fun thing to kind of see what they're doing there.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of one of the great things about this game is that we play – in the same arena as the pros. And so it's a really cool part of that.
Yeah, that's always fun. But it's not really. Like, if I'm playing from the whites, these guys are not playing from the whites. But hopefully what I'm going to be able to do is hit an 8-iron or a wedge on my second shot, as opposed to if I was playing farther back, I'm now hitting hybrid or 3-wood on my second shot, where these guys... See, that's the thing about the play-it-forward thing that I like. It's like, you know, we're playing on the same course, but it's a completely different way to play, because we can't, you know, the accuracy is not there.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, definitely different skill levels and different speeds in the golf swing and things like that. And I think that players should definitely play at the correct tee for them. But the golf course is designed to be played a certain way, right? So if you're hitting your driver 200 yards, you shouldn't be playing the same tee box as the guy that's hitting his driver 325 yards. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I think that's again, why we have handicaps and why we have different tee boxes. And another great part of the game is that I can go play golf with my dad and we don't have to play on the same tee box, but we could be right next to each other in the fairway and then right next to each other onto the green, hopefully, and all that kind of stuff, right? That's kind of a nice thing that we can go do that compared to trying to change our games from playing on the same tee. So yeah. I think that's one of the best things. And yeah, you're right. The play it forward, that's probably one of the better parts of it, is that, yeah, you see the guy on TV hitting a wedge and you're hitting a 9-iron now, and it all kind of makes sense.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, well, you know, the way we play, it's I'll see you at the tee box, I'll see you on the green, basically.
Yeah.
And it's a wild adventure between there and now. But I do want to talk to you about, I want to talk about practice, and not just practice, but I want to, you know, get some advice and tips and do's and don'ts on practice. And I want to use that to compare it to warming up, with the differences. And we're going to talk about that. But I want to take a short break right here.
Okay, great.
So let's talk about the difference between practice and warm up. Let's start there, and how we should approach those differently.
Okay. Well, the first thing is to put those two things into very different categories. And warming up would be what happens in the 30 minutes before you're going to go play. And I think that there's definitely some great approaches to a warm-up. And those, the main approach would be to start with something small. And so if you were to walk out onto any range with tour players or low-digit players, and they were just to start swinging, they would always start hitting some 5, 10, 15, 20-yard kind of shot with a wedge, partial swing. And then what they're really trying to do is just get the club on the ball, get the contact in the center of the face, start getting something to feel good, and then trying to figure out what it's looking like today. As the swing starts getting bigger and they get into their longer swings and they're maybe moving into something like an 8-iron, hitting some balls again, trying to work on some rhythm, trying to work on some balance, trying to get the ball in the center of the club, seeing what the ball's doing. Obviously, if you've been working on your swing, you might have some swing thoughts that you would be using. But this is the time to be using the swing thoughts, not coming up or creating new swing thoughts. And then you definitely want to finish with hitting something like a fairway wood or a driver. Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus are famous for leaving the range hitting the shot they're going to hit on the first tee.
Mm.
They visualize the first hole and then they'll hit something like that. Most of the time, you do see players leave the range and then walk over to the putting green, usually because we need to do some kind of putting, and that's kind of by the tee box. So when you're over by the putting green and you're just warming up, I would highly recommend getting some idea of some long putts, some 30, 40, 50, 60-foot putts, and trying to lag a couple balls down there the same distance. Ben Crenshaw used to say that if I could two putt from 60 feet in a tournament, that's going to save me a stroke more so than trying to find it somewhere else on the round, right? So that's a really easy way to kind of save a stroke there. And then I would definitely want to do something from inside of 5 feet, where I'm making a couple of putts, trying to build a little bit of confidence to get out on the golf course and get used to seeing the ball kind of go into the hole. But that process is a 30-minute process to hour process for different players.
Oh, I'm so glad that you said that, because I generally give myself an hour to warm up. My friends are like, what are you talking about? I'll be there 15 minutes before the round. It's like, well, then you don't care. I'm going to get there an hour so I can hit balls and then I can do some short, you know, stuff around the practice green, and then I can putt for a while. But and then, because I hate feeling rushed. I hate feeling rushed.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's lots of different kinds of people, right? And there's some people that don't feel rushed with 20 minutes on the clock.
Yeah.
And they don't have a problem showing up then. You talk to somebody like Lee Trevino, and he used to get to the tournaments 5 hours before his tee time because he knew he was going to talk in the locker room for 2 or 3 hours. But that was just the kind of guy he was, right? So if he showed up with 2 hours to go to his tee time, he was going to feel rushed, and he didn't want to do that. So I think you got to kind of figure out what's the right recipe for you. But usually longer is not always better in the warm-up, you know, especially when you get going past the hour mark.
Tell me why.
But mostly because that starts turning into practice. It usually turns down a negative road and getting tired, right? Yeah. So, you know, it'd be like the equivalent of, yeah, I'm going to go play in a basketball game and I'm going to go to the gym and run 5 miles right beforehand. Yeah, you might be warmed up, but you're also 3/4 of the way done, right? So I think you want to manage that. And remember, you're warming up because it's all about going on the course and playing and seeing what you can do out there.
Okay. Well, I'm not a country club guy, so the hour includes, you know, it's like I want to pull into the parking lot an hour ahead of my tee time, which gives me time to put on the shoes. It gives me time to get the cart all, you know, in order, because my push cart, because I'm a walker.
And, oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah. I can't. I actually, my back hurts when I play in a cart, when I'm driving in a cart from the sitting and stuff.
I need to walk.
And the round that I played this afternoon, you really can't walk. It's just they've set it up so you really can't. So I got to walk the first 6 holes, and then I was in the cart the rest of the time. And my game definitely changed after getting in the cart. It definitely went downhill. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's one of the negatives to the desert golf out here. It's not, you know, not that it's a negative, it's just a different style, is that the courses are built with, you know, kind of in some housing developments, right? There's more houses around and stuff like that. So you're crossing roads. And so there's not a lot of golf courses you can walk down here in the desert. And that's one of the things that I always enjoy when I go to Montana or Colorado or Northern California, and you get to see some nice green trees and walk around. And that's always a nice part of the game too.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's the wildlife and the views.
And living here
in Northern California, I got a lot of walking up and down hills. One of the courses that I play, there's only one level hole on the entire course. You're either hitting up to the green, or you're hitting up and then down, or down and then up, and it goes on forever. All right, so what is the difference between a warm-up and a practice?
Well, so I think, yeah, kind of laid out what the warm-up was. And then I think when we started talking practice, you know, you see a lot of the, you know, the tour players is kind of an example. You see a lot of them practice after their rounds, which is an interesting thing.
Really interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the reasons that they're doing that is they're trying to work on things that weren't working so well that day, right?
Oh.
And so I think that one of the big things that you should make sure you're doing if you're going out to practice would be to have some kind of a plan and have some kind of an idea of what you're trying to work on. If you're on the 30-minute mark and you haven't really worked on anything, I'd probably just throw that over in the warm-up category and not the practice category anymore.
I see.
Right? So having some kind of a plan. You know, Christy Kerr used to take a lot of lessons out at PGA Weston with the Jim McLean School, and she used to come out to her lessons with a yellow legal pad with about 12 different things highlighted on there. And then she would just cross them off one by one. She'd go down her list and keep going and keep going. And then when she hit the bottom of her list, she'd usually go hang out by the putting green and do some more practice over there and then go home, you know? And so that's one of the things where I think with practice that people could change some habits and really try to go into it with a little bit more focus, a little bit more of a game plan. And then I don't think that standing there for 3 hours is something that you necessarily need to do. I think that you can get a lot accomplished in an hour or two. So controlling your distances is a really big thing. Having a target is also a really big thing when you're practicing, to know and be aware of where the ball is going in relation to your target. I see a lot of people hit balls where the target seems like the target's the driving range. And the problem with that is that they are succeeding every time they hit, as long as they feel like it was a good one. And then they walk out later onto the golf course, and all of that feel that was a good one kind of goes out the window because the ball's not near the hole anymore, and everybody knows that it wasn't a good shot, right? So that goes back into trying to do something in practice with maybe where you're keeping a score, right? So there's a green out there at 125 yards on the practice range. I'm going to work on my 9-iron. I've been working on some stuff with – I've been taking some lessons and working on some stuff. I'm going to go over here now and have a little 10-ball practice session where I'm going to hit 10 balls at that green at 125 and see how many balls I can land on the green. You know, one of the things that you can see in your practice is you say, well, geez, in January I only got 5 on the green out of the 10. And I'm sitting here in August and I can pretty easily get 7 or 8 on there, and I've gotten 9 or 10 once or twice. And so you can start seeing some kind of a progression, and then you can start building some confidence, right? So confidence is built by seeing successes. And I think that in golf instruction, we try to do whatever we can to make sure that student leaves there with some kind of a success for that day. And I think that that's something that people should be trying to put into their own practice time, and setting themselves up for success, right? And not not trying to do things that are way too hard, and trying to not trying to do things that are too easy, but trying to just kind of move the level up a little bit. You know, a lot of people reference tour players. I've referenced tour players on this podcast today. But if you just take a look at the people that are beating you, right? And so my buddy always beats me by 5 strokes. Try to find out what the quality is that he might have, and forget about what it looks like. I'm just saying, like, well, he doesn't really miss any putts inside of 8 feet, or well, whenever he gets inside of 150 yards, he always gets that ball on the green, right? And so those would be some qualities of what those lower handicappers in you have, and those would be things to try to go work on in your practice. And trying to isolate those parts of the game will help you advance them.
Lots of times, I think what I've witnessed is people at the driving range are more concerned about distance than about accuracy. It's like they feel like they go to have a good shot. It's like, oh, well, I hit that one well and it went far. That was the shot I've been looking for. But again, if you're not aiming at anything, is there value to that? I guess only if you can
repeat
it.
Yeah, well, I think that people are definitely obsessed with hitting it far and not that worried about it going straight. I think that the other one that should go right up there with that is people aren't really interested in trying to do it twice, you know, and the name of the game is make it repeat. And so, you know, that one shot that was really good, and people get all excited about that, where we could take 5 shots that are maybe 8 out of 10 instead of the 10 out of 10. And we'd be doing better like that. Right. So trying to get things to repeat is a really big part of getting better at this game, more so than can I do that? It's can I do that consistently? And that kind of goes back where I was saying, you know, get out when you're in trouble, get out of trouble. It's like, yeah, I've hit a ball through that tree before and I've gotten it on the green, but the odds are so low that I'll pull that off. I'm going to go the other way. And I think that that's the same kind of approach to trying to get things to repeat. You know, you need to see those things happen over and over to build some confidence to try to go for those kinds of shots.
Give me some do's and don'ts on the practice range.
Well, the big don't on the practice range would be don't have 2 balls in the air at the same time.
Huh?
So like they're machine gunning balls out there and hitting balls without looking at them, right? So kind of raking them over and hitting and raking and hitting and raking and hitting.
Right.
Which is something that I know you might say, like, how could that happen?
Yeah. I'm like,
oh, it happens.
I see the raking, you know, rake and hit, yeah. Rake and hit, but I've never seen two balls in the air.
Yeah, they get going pretty fast sometimes. So I think try not to hit balls where you're just raking them over and not paying any attention to what's going on. Do not walk on the driving range and hit your driver first. And let's see, another one would be,
let me stop you there and ask about the amount of time spent with your driver versus other clubs.
Well, I think that if you're having a day where you're going to go practice your driver, then that might be a day where you hit a whole bunch of drivers. I think when you look at how much your practice schedule allows for certain things throughout a week or a month or a year, and you start saying, well, what percentage am I dedicating to something like that? I like a lot of quotes from people that were really good in the game, and they asked Annika when she retired, they asked her, well, how much did you practice your long game versus your short game? And she said, well, I practiced my short game 80% of the time, but I got it all wrong. And they said, well, what do you mean? She said, I should have done my short game a whole lot more.
Wow.
And so this is one of the best players to ever walk on a golf course saying, like, look, after you have the ability to hit the golf ball and you have some control over it in your full swing, the stuff that really matters is inside the 125 yards.
No question.
That doesn't mean that you neglect the other stuff, but I think that you start saying, well, how important is it for me to get 5 more yards on my driver? It might have zero effect. You might do it and have zero effect on your game, where you start saying, well, I'm 10% better from inside of 80 yards. Well, you just lowered your score very quickly. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So interesting.
Yeah. And so I think some of the do's of the practice were just, sorry to go back to that, but
please.
The do's of the practice were just like saying, have a plan, pay attention to what's going on. Try to have an idea of what you're going to be doing next. And so you're not just reacting to the last golf ball and, oh, I'm hitting hooks today, so now I'm going to do this. Say, hey, I'm working on my 7-iron lower trajectory shots. I'm working on setup with my driver, and I'm working on this with my putting, right? And so you have an idea of where you're going to be going and how much time you need to be spending at each one, because there's only so much time in your practice session, right? So you can't just stay with that 7-iron for 55 minutes and then say, oh, I was going to leave at an hour, so now I've practiced. We need to make sure we're separating those times out along the way.
How often do you get students come to you and say, look, you know, I'm just, I don't hit the ball consistently, right? You know, the classic, I have no consistency. Do you ask them how much do you practice? And they say, well, I don't practice. I warm up for 10, 15 minutes and then I play golf, but I don't practice. How do you respond? I'm sure you hear that.
I mean, I definitely hear that. I definitely hear also a lot of, well, I do practice, but then when you pry a little deeper, they're all just a lot of warm ups.
Yeah.
I think that two things. One is a good instructor is going to show them why they're inconsistent. And then hopefully come up with some ideas of how to become more consistent. And some of that might be technique driven. Some of that might be habit driven from practicing or stuff like that. But then I think a good instructor is also going to kind of right the ship with what are the right expectations for you and what is consistent for a whatever handicap. And that's where I was kind of going into some of that stuff where it's like, if you're a 15, check out what a 12 handicap does. Don't worry so much about what that zero is doing over there, right? So just kind of take a peek over there. And because that 12 handicap is still missing greens, right? Still missing some putts, but he's doing a couple of things about 3 shots better than you. And so that might be something to kind of a way to look at it.
I love when people say, I just need to be more consistent. It's like, well, what are your scores generally? He goes, yeah, between 90 and 95. Well, you're pretty consistent. There's things you need to work on, no question about it. What is your favorite short game drill?
My favorite short game drill would be taking a wedge, like a sand wedge or a lob wedge, at about 30 yards and hitting a low shot, a medium shot, and a high shot to the same distance.
Ooh.
I think that's a great drill for a player to start controlling the loft on the club and controlling the landing spot.
Awesome. What a great way to finish this up. That was fabulous. Thank you.
Oh, well, thanks for having me on. I had a lot of fun.
Up next is the Golf Smarter Academy, brought to you by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, swimmers, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Now, the Golf Smarter Academy is our way of letting you get some free advice on an issue you're currently having with your game or your gear. I mean, think about this. The podcast is my way of getting free advice on improving my game. I want you to have the same opportunity. So if you'd like to participate, call our toll-free line at 415-761-1498. There's a button right on our website that will dial it for you from your smartphone or your tablet. Your answer will come from our teaching legend, Tony Manzoni, or another one of our PGA teaching professionals that you've heard on the podcast. And when your question gets answered on the show, you'll receive a copy of Tony's DVD, The Lost Fundamental, a Golf Smarter Academy diploma, and one of our brand new Golf Smarter ball markers. I'll leave a photo of the ball marker on our website for you to check out. It's a ball marker, so what? But it says Golf Smarter on it, and it also gives the URL, and it touts us as the Golfers Podcast, which I recently came up with and looked up, and my goodness, nobody's using it. So I was in a foursome last week, and I hand out these ball markers, and a guy says, "Oh, you do a golfer's podcast?" And I'm like, "Yes, it worked. Okay." Anyway, I want you to have one of those. I want you to have one of our new ball markers as well. So you should submit a question at 415-761-1498. Now, my apologies for making the ball marker and the DVD only for U.S. addresses, but apparently shipping costs and declarations outside the U.S. have made it too costly and difficult to ship those out. Now let's go to our inbox at the Golf Smarter Academy, presented by Health IQ, and hear from a golf martyr who needs some help from Tony Manzoni.
Hey friends, it's Todd from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I have a quick question for Tony. I keep locking my hip on some of my swings, and I didn't know if there's a drill or not to where I can fully rotate my hips and my arms through the shot at all, and see if there's anything I can help you, if you can help me out with all the rotation of my hips to follow through. Appreciate the feedback. Thanks.
Hi, Todd from Philly. This is Tony Manzoni. I'm very happy to help you. I see you talking about you're blocking your hips a bit. Okay, what I'd like you to do is to stand in a position where you're going to hit the ball, crisscross your arms across your chest. You can even hold a club straight across your chest so that you can see how much turn you have. Start with a hip turn, a right hip turn. Now, make sure that your right hip is in line to the instep of your right foot, not on the foot, but instep. And that's as far to the right you go in the golf swing. You don't go any further. So to start the swing, you're going to rotate your right hip and back pocket behind you towards the left heel. Okay, so that's going to hold you on the ball. From that position, actually stop. Your shoulder should be fully turned to 80 to 90 degrees, and your hip should be 40 to 45 degrees. And then unwind what you wound up and go around the left leg so that your left hip and your left shoulder pull back. So the left hip and left shoulder are going to be going away from the target, and that's going to pull your right side through the target. And you should end up, when you finish that motion, you should end up with your chest quite a bit left of the target. And in doing so, you'll find that your right shoulder is pointing right at the target. Now, that's the optimum position. I don't know what your flexibility level is, but I'm a pretty old guy and I can do it, so I'm pretty confident you can too. If you work on that motion so your body understands where it's supposed to go in the swing, the arms will come along for the ride. You do not want to do anything with the arms except keep them connected at the left pectoral muscle. And as you take the club back, you're taking the address position back into a position, and then you're pulling through with the hips and left side, and that pulls the arms and that position that you just created through to the left side. So we keep it real simple. We don't want the arms to lead the body. If they do that, then you're subject to your timing that day, and that's a nightmare. I hope this helps. You take care now, and let us know how you're doing.
Golf Smarter Academy is presented by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, swimmers, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/golfsmarter to see if you qualify. Now, are you aware that physically active people have a 34% lower risk of all-cause mortality? Active people also have a 56% lower risk of heart disease and 22% decrease in cancer mortality compared to the people who remain inactive. You may not be aware of those stats, but Health IQ is, and they want you to take advantage of it. I want you to take advantage of it too. Now, the Health IQ Advantage is a unique mortality model on the health conscious, and that enables them to secure lower rates for health conscious people. It replaces the BMI with waist to hip ratio and cholesterol calculations. So if you've yet to purchase life insurance, if you're in the market, or you're wanting to find lower or exclusive rates, then check out an insurance company with a common sense approach. Health IQ is not an insurance broker or insurer. They're an insurance agency. So to see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/golfsmarter. Or mention the promo code GOLFSMARTER when you talk to a Health IQ agent. I found that I've been much more active and engaged on Instagram lately, not only posting photos from my latest rounds, but I'm now including our custom artwork for each new episode with a link to the podcast. So follow @GolfSmarter on Instagram and use #GolfSmarter to catch my attention if you have a question or comment. And this morning I received some really awesome feedback from Golf Martyr Ron Dexter. Thanks, Ron, for your comments. I hope I didn't overwhelm you with my reply. Again, use #GolfSmarter on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and don't forget to check out all our Academy offerings from the podcast to our clinics at golfsmarter.com/academy.